Manchester Rain at Taylor, Real 9. But we're talking about your reception when you first joined this the Welsh regiment, somewhere behind the Somme when they were at rest.
Yeah.
Did you actually go in the line with them before you caught flu?
Oh, yes, yes.
Do you remember anything about your first time going into the trenches?
Yes, I do. I remember going up to the line, and we were some long way behind. Now, remember this, I'm only 18 years old, and there's a lot of weight to carry, and I wasn't a big lad in any case. And I felt how stupid it was. It took me all my time to carry the pack and the bandoliers of ammunition. And by the time we got to the supports, they were shattered. And it was evening, they always are very relieved at night. And we fell out of reserve, and then during the night we were taken up to our places in the line where we were leaving something. And there was always guides to take you up. And I remember the feeling of relief for the people we were relieving. Although, I must say, my first impression was, it's not so bad here. It's quiet. And it was quiet. It was quiet for quite a long time. By quiet, I didn't know any different. I didn't know what quiet or because there was still quite an amount of firing went on and quite a lot of activities. For instance, they would, at night, it was usual for a patrol to be detailed. Usually every night. And they'd be led by corporal, sergeant. And the job was to go out in front of the line, wherever the line was, and I don't know whether you could call it reconnoitring, or I may use the wrong word, but just to see if the Germans were trying something. And I suppose, and I have heard some of the lads say, but they'd met German patrols, and they were occupied with the same idea, to see what we were trying to do. And then there became they may have decided on a wiring party. They may have thought there was some part of your front, the wiring wasn't up to standard, and they would detail a wiring party. Now, nobody liked that. That meant going out at night, you know, with the wire, and these, their poles were like corkscrew things, and he screwed them into the ground and looped the wire on. And it was supposed, well, that was the idea. They used to send people out in front of the wiring party just for as outposts to see that they weren't disturbed. And it wasn't a nice job, that at all. In fact, it was during one of them that I got slightly hit in the leg.
We'll come back, because I want to ask you most of the questions about that sort of thing later on. You thought you remembered it best from early 1918.
Oh, yeah.
Were there any incidents you remember during this first bit in the trenches?
No, as I say, I never took part, or there were no major battles, as you say, that I took part in. None at all, not then. But bear in mind, we thought every small thing we thought was a big one, because, understand this, you only knew about the war just in your own sector. You knew nothing else. They didn't give you a lot of news. No, you didn't. You knew nothing about only what was happening just in your own immediate sector. We were kept very short of information. The chief information when we return for leave or something like that, you know.
So, now this first period we talked about didn't last very long because you fell ill. Could you tell us about that?
Oh, well, I was on a parade. We were on a parade, a medical inspection. And there had been a period of people falling sick, you know. And I well remember being lined up. Actually, it was a short arm inspection. And the doctor came around and he looked at me. And he passed on to the next man. Then he turned back. And he took a thermometer in my mouth. And then passed on to looked at about two others. Then he came back to me. And I remember pulling this thermometer out of my mouth. And then he
shook it
back. But he didn't go away. He stood there. He pulled it out. That's the last thing I remember. I must have collapsed right away. I woke up in a Canadian hospital.
Had you felt ill before that?
I hadn't felt very well. No, I didn't feel very well. But I've never experienced anything like that before or since. I have this vivid recollection of him shaking this thermometer and then sticking it back in my mouth. And then when he pulled it out and he just looked like that, and I can almost, I don't know, he shook me, I can see him now, pull it out. Next thing I remember, I'm in hospital.
Just to put a short arm inspection, were they common?
Happen? Well, you drop your trousers. And the doctor came along. He lifted his shirt up, and he had a little stick, like a pencil, and he lifted it up, you know, and just have a look if you hadn't got a dose or something like that. Oh, yes, fairly regularly they did that.
Did a lot of men have VD problems?
No, I wouldn't say a lot. I'm in my own unit. You just heard of the odd ones. But it wasn't something that was rife in our battalions at all. I never came across it as being an epidemic or anything like that. But you did hear of people, you know. It wasn't something we talked about a great lot, you know.
Now, you say you collapsed on this parade, and the next thing you knew, you were in a Canadian hospital. That's when you woke up, was it?
Yes.
And where was that at?
Now, I don't know where it was. The only thing I knew it was a Canadian hospital, because the first thing I remember when I woke up, I saw two go up, huge men, one on either side of the bed. And I knew they were Canadian or Americans by their accent. And I remember their first words. Poor little booger. They are scraping the bottom of the barrel. Now, I remember that. Poor little booger. Because I had my hair cut. Oh, you know, I looked like a skinhead. I didn't weigh 100 pounds. And I must have looked a pathetic creature. But I heard afterwards these fellows were part of a Canadian baseball team. They were kept down there playing baseball. Of course, when we were being moved back to our units, these were the nasty things we used to say about the base people who were in hospital, you know. True or untrue, I don't know.
Now, this wasn't at Etarps, was it, or was it?
You what?
Was it at Etarps?
No, I went on to Etarps from there.
Were you well treated? I mean,
in the hospital? Oh, yes.
How long was it before you felt better?
Well, I believe I was unconscious 2 or 3 days, and perhaps may have been a week. And I think I was kept in perhaps a day or two longer because I was no size, you know. Felt a bit sorry for me, I suppose.
And where did you go from then?
At Etarps then.
And what was happening at Etarps? That was the big base
depot. Oh, yes. Terrific place, that. Oh, it was enormous. There was varying estimates of the number of people that were there, but it was enormous. In fact, He was subject to air raids, you know. On flying time from the German airfields, we estimated at 3 minutes. So they did get a pasting. In fact, I did hear, although I wasn't there at the time. There was one time, and I think it was about Whitsuntide, a terrific air raid there, although I happened to know, I knew quite a few that were in it. And killed quite a few of the Women's Army Corps who were stationed on the another camp further away. And the story about that was that the trains used to run right up to the camp, you know. And the story went that a Belgian driver had left the firebox open. Now, if you've ever seen a steam train with a firebox open at night, it's just like a searchlight. It really is. Have you ever seen that? You know what I mean by the fire? The door, the when it's open, it's like a furnace. And it shut out just like a... And it is just like a searchlight. I've seen it many times in the old steam train. On this occasion, they said this Belgian had panicked and left the door open. And the Germans, they just did a shuttle service and they gave it a rat pest in that night. So that was the story of...
Was there a bombing raid while you were
there? Oh, yes, there were two.
What do you remember of them?
Well, we were in tents. Now, these tents were dug in, you know, bell tents, they were called, and that's what they still are. And there's a flap about that deep at the bottom.
How deep was that?
They used to roll up for ventilation. But they dug below the so that the flaps, the tent came right to the ground, and what were the flaps would be below. So you were really in a shallow depression. Alongside the rows of these tents were what became known as slit trenches. We didn't call them slit trenches then, but that's what they were. And during an air raid, of course, you made a dive for them. And I will remember, it was a frightening experience. The air raid did frighten me. And I remember the ground shuddering. And, but no explosion. But the tents that we'd come out with were absolutely blown away. They didn't get. But when we looked next morning, where we'd been, there was an aerial torpedo embedded in the side of the trench. It didn't go off. It would be about 10 or 15 yards further down than where I was. And it didn't go off. And that's when I felt... The whole ground shuddered like that. And it was stuck in the side. And that was a little bit frightening. I don't think I'd have been near it. That would have gone off, because you were a big one.
That was one raid. What about the other raid?
Well, the others were... They're of a similar nature, but that one in particular is... It brought to my mind because of this aerial torpedo. And to get people fit, because when you went there, there was such a variety of regiments, people. They had training schemes, and they had a bull ring there. Now, above the bull ring, that's what they used to call it, where people got fit again to go up the line.
And did you go? You had to do that.
Yes, you had to. You'd go through the bull ring.
What was the training like in the bull ring?
It was horrible. I have never ever met anyone who went to the bull ring who enjoyed it. The NCOs, they were. Is it sadist or sadist? I think they were all that. They were buggers. But they didn't go in the line. Their job was keeping you. Ooh, they were a horrible lot. I never heard anybody give them a good name. And nobody liked going to the bull ring. So, whether it was designed, in that way so that you would declare yourself fit, so you would have to go in there. It was easier. You got an easier time with your battalion than you would in the bullring. It was horrible.
What was so horrible about it? Can you remember what you did in it?
Yes, well, the training exercises. You got no time to yourself during the day. You were pushed about. You were drilled till you're exhausted. They were bullies. It amazes me in this day and age how people studied. The discipline must have been magnificent to get people to stand what they put up with at those camps. It really was, you know.
Was it on, what was the, you know, the boring itself, was that on the sand?
It was just like a great big field. Oh, yes.
Did you ever have to go over the obstacle course there?
Well, there weren't an obstacle course there, but I have been on them, though.
You didn't go on there, though?
No, not on that one there.
When did you go on them?
There were... Oh, I've been on two. I don't know, one was at Bury St Edmunds, but I'm not quite... I can't recall where. But if you recall what we had to do... Oh, crud. When you'd finish that, usually finished up on the floor. Utterly exhausted.
Now, were you at Etampes before or after when the mutiny with the mutiny?
No, it was. I was there before.
Was there any? That must have been quite close to it, though. Was there any sort of sensation, or was there any tension in the place?
Yes, there was plenty of tension because there were so many people, and you see, the casualties returning from England. Etaps. And Etaps was the gathering ground. We call it Etaps. I don't know what the proper pronunciation is. It was the gathering ground for drafts and returning fit men to the lines. And I wouldn't like to guess the number of people who were there. There were thousands there. It was a terrific place.
And was there any sense that anyone was going to do anything about these red caps and
yellow? No, you wouldn't say. Everybody was sick of them, you know. Really fed up with them. And I must say that when this trouble started, people who'd been there weren't surprised because the antagonism against these red caps, it was something. Because they were... they were horrible.
Did you know about the mutiny when you got back to your unit?
Only vaguely. They were very... You only got to know about it through people coming back to your unit. You see, you got it... It was generally... They'd tell a tale. And, of course, we'll say a dozen people came back to your unit. So we were at Etaps. There's a dozen men amongst... About 1,000, and there's something happening every day, and they say, oh, they're half a row, you know, and that this is how it...
Was it long after you got back to your unit when you heard about the mutiny?
Well, I couldn't say about that. I can't just recall how long, you know.
When you were at Etaps, were you allowed out into the local villages at all?
No. In fact, you'd have a job on, because it was such a vast place. And there were canteens and things like that, so there was no point. And then you know who out with.
So you just go to the canteens?
Just go to the canteens. And they used to play these games, housey house, you crown lank, and all the things that people did, you know. The feeding of those people was a mammoth job. Because I remember being there and meeting a fellow from this area, and he expressed surprise that I was there because he's older than me, you know. And I have a vivid recollection of him. He was a corporal, and do you know, The stripes were chalked on his arm. They couldn't get all the stripes, and they were chalked on his arm. And I remember him saying, I'd had something to eat, and of course, I had, but not what I like. Come on, he'd get something. And he took me to where his unit was, and I think he had a bit of something to do with Cuckoo's. Anyway, I did get another meal there. And I met him after he got the DCM with the Manchester Regiment.
Do you remember his name?
Yes, Jack O'Hara. I think he was with the 12th Battalion when he won the DCM. Mm. And then, funnily enough, talking of my early days, he was the patrol leader for the scouts that I was in. And I became friendly with him. In fact, we married companions afterwards, after the war. And he always said that this scouting, the training we had as scouts, enabled him to do what he did when he got the DCM. And it's very strange, that, because I've seen the citation many times, and I could believe what he said, how it would, what happened.
Hmm. Now, were you pleased? I mean, you say that part of the idea might have been to make it more attractive to go back to your battalion.
Yeah.
You were put in a draft back to your own
battalion. Oh, yes, yes.
Were you pleased when you got drafted back, or how did you feel?
Well, it didn't matter. You reached the stage of... You knew you'd have to go back sometime, and when it came, well, you did it. And you didn't.
And had things... Were you pleased to be going back to the same battalion, or would you rather have gone to, say, Manchester?
Your own battalion, because... you knew people there, and you were friendly with some of the lads there, you know. They were as much to find out what's happened when you got back, who's anybody been hit or what have you, you know. This is all they boil down to.
And about how long had you been away?
Oh.
In all, I mean?
3 weeks to a month.
So what was happening when you got back? Were they still in the Somme?
Still the same. And they were still in the same area.
Now, this is where you were to stay in this area for a long time.
Oh,
right,
yeah.
Right through to
yeah.
the German attack.
Yeah.
I'd like to ask, then, our sort of questions about conditions of living, you know, generally through this time. Can you remember what the trenches were like?
Well, they weren't in the manner of trenches... As you would understand, like embrasures or anything. They were a series of, I don't want to call them trenches or strong points linked. I should say that was a better
What would the strong point look like?
Well, a strong point would have, certainly have a machine gun. And they were, of course, always manned. And the others, they had a fire step on the communicating trenches, had a fire step where a person stood on that so he could look over the parapet. He could, and that was your job at night.
I'll come on to that, but just the actual shape of the trenches. Was the strong point, was it separate there? Was it in a circle or anything, or was it just part
of
the...
It was certainly big, and often enough, there'd be a dugout at the back.
And how deep would the trench be?
Well, as deep as they could conveniently dig it. They were deep enough to... But it varied at different places. It depended what the conditions were like. There were some places where they were just old ruins, you know. It was part of a village, a farmhouse or what have you. And they run right through there.
What about, how did they keep the sides up? Did they have anything to keep the sides together?
Riveting, they call it, riveting, I think.
Was that common in this area?
Not really. It wasn't really corn, but it depended on the place itself. If there was a danger of the sides crumbling, they would put revetting or try the best way they could to strengthen the sides.
Who'd do that? Would it be you?
Oh, yes, you do it while you're in the line. Oh,
so
yes.
You've done that, did you?
Oh, yes.
What did you use to revet it?
Anything that you could get hold of. The stumps in and planks behind them and anything to hold the sides in.
What about... You say there were sort of strong points. What would link the strong points?
A communicating trench.
And they'd have fire steps as well?
Oh,
they?
Yes. Fire steps. There were plenty of fire steps. There had to be because if the enemy or the Germans made an attack, you'd have to get on the fire step to be able to see over the parapet, you see.
So there was the strong points and then the communication trench to the next strong point. Was it? So there wasn't that much difference between that and the front line?
Oh, no, but that is the front line. And going from there, there will be communicating trenches back to the close supports. And theirs were similar, except they'd done their stint in the front line and they were back there for a couple of days.
Now, how much barbed wire would there be, typically, in front?
Oh, it depended. Some places there was a lot, some places there wasn't a lot. Some places were heavily defended. I suppose it depended on what value the authorities placed on that particular area, you know.
So how thick would it be where it was important?
Well, there would be perhaps... It may go as wider than this room. They uncoil wire in between lines, or they don't coil wire, just leave it. Just uncoil it. It was great. Obviously possible to get through it, you know.
So about 10 feet to 12 feet?
Oh, yes, thick. Yes.
Now, what would the thinnest it would be?
Well, the thinnest was just a bit of wire in front of you. Mind you, you always knew you had to have gaps in the wire. You had to have to let your patrol through. You had to have that. And but apart from that, trench warfare became static, wire became quite a. It became quite an event. Wiring.
I'll come back to wiring. Did you all know where these gaps in the wire were? Were they pointed out to you?
Oh, yes, you knew where they were.
Would they be marked, or were you just told?
You were told, in fact. Oh, you knew where they were, all right, because usually they were taped.
How would they be taped?
A tape on the floor. From where you were, where the patrol was standing from, there'd be a white tape run out to the gaps in the wire.
Was that left there all the time?
Oh, yes.
Whether there was a patrol or not.
Oh, well, they always left.